Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Justin True, and Justin is a legend. I mean, the best way I can describe this conversation is afterwards, right after we got off the call, I was going for a run. I think I had 6 or 7 miles scheduled to run that day, and I ended up running my first half marathon because of Justin's energy. Was just repeating in my head. So I'm hoping this conversation will have the same type of impact on you of just listening to this and feeling like you can accomplish more than you might originally think in any given moment. And who is Justin? Justin is someone who had a tumultuous childhood, which we got into in this episode. We got into how he's then used this childhood to create a stronger version of himself. And because of that reason, I was so excited, so thrilled to join Justin today on this journey as we go through his life and how he's taken his circumstances and propelled him to a new direction. So without further ado, this is my epic conversation with Justin True.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Justin True, thank you for coming on the podcast, my friend. I've been following you for a month now on Instagram. I love your positive energy. I love your approach to life. And I'm so grateful you are in this life so that we can have this experience together. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor to be on. I've seen some of the guests you've had. And when you approached me, I was like, oh, shoot, man, this is rad. So yeah, man, it's an honor. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I'd love to start with your bio. It says runner, strongman, astronaut. You've been to space?
No. I just like messing around. Like, it just wanted something to be like, wait, is this guy really an astronaut? Because I don't know, it just seemed funny. Like, people always ask, like, if I do, I don't know, like my buddies see my page and they're like, dude, if I didn't know you, I would just think that like the stuff you do isn't real. You know, going from like pulling a car to like walking across Madagascar, he's like, that's just so weird. Those aren't even like combining things in like the sports realm. I would just think you're making it up. And like, I have a hard time believing it, even though I am your friend and I know you did it. So I'm like, yeah, man, might as well just throw out astronaut, just mess with everybody. Like, I just like having a good time.
I think the connection is you pushing yourself to become all you can be. And it's not really outside of the realm of possibility that you would go to space one day, because I feel like knowing you and knowing your personality, you'd be like, oh yeah, space, that's a cool challenge. Let's get it, right? Like, yeah, that is you. So
yeah, for sure. Like I'm aiming for the stars, man. So if someone invites me to space, I'm there.
Yeah. So you just mentioned two things that I'd love to talk to you about. The Madagascar. Let's start with the Madagascar. Walking across. Yeah. What is that? Like, who does that? How do you get that idea to do that? And man. And let's take us through that journey.
Yeah, man. I had initially tried walking across Africa as a whole, and that was back in 2018 spring. And that obviously leads to another story. Ended up getting kidnapped and then deported. And that's a wild time. But yeah, I got in touch with some people just Instagram trying to find out more information about, you know, am I going to get eaten by like a lion today or not? And kind of asked like, people around, started following similar accounts based in like Africa and expeditions. And they were like, hey, you should talk to this one guy who his thing is like walking the wildest rivers. And got in touch with him and basically, you know, assured me that I won't get attacked by like a lion or a hippo unless I'm next to like a national park. So camping, I should be safe if I just do it somewhere else. And yeah, so just got in touch with him about that, asking him, kind of picking his brain. And then a year later, he's like, hey man, I'm going to walk across Madagascar. Like, you know, I'm like, yeah, man, I'm in. Like, I would love to do that if you'd have me. So yeah, he was like the expedition leader. And yeah, man, we just went after it.
How many miles is that?
It was about 500 by the time we were done. Like, we had a lot of cutbacks and everything and trying to find different like tributaries that like, we were trying to follow the largest river in Madagascar, which is the Mangoki. And there's no known source of it. It's kind of like how the Nile was back in the day. Nobody knows where the Nile started. And that's where like, I think Livingston and somebody else, forget his last name, that was their mission to find the source of it. And so that was kind of our mission, find the source and then walk to the coast following it. And it, we were just hopping back and forth between tributaries. So the miles added up to about 500 in about a month.
Wow. And what did you learn about yourself?
Oh man, that my feet were just not meant for that. I was too heavy, man. I was probably went that about like 220. And it was right after the carpool. That the carpool was in like August 1st, August 2nd. And that I started on at the end of August, like 29th, I think. And so I was still super heavy. I overpacked. So I was just like a brick every time I stepped in sand and everything. And it definitely built up my endurance for, I guess, just being on my feet. I know what my limit is. I know how far I've taken my body. And that really, you know, really toughened me up in that aspect. Running with Hector this past weekend, like my feet were hurting, but I'm like, hey man, like I still can feel my feet. Like Madagascar, I couldn't feel my feet. I had like, my feet had swelled so much that I had my nerves were pinched and every step was just like a shockwave up my leg. And it was brutal. Probably one of the most painful things I've ever felt. And I just think while being with Hector, I'm like, hey man, like my feet are, I don't have any shock. So let's go.
You created a new level of pain for yourself. On that Madagascar trip,
which I didn't even know I was going to do. I just thought it was going to be like a gorgeous, cool adventure. And then all of a sudden, man, like your back is aching, your legs are aching. Like we were surviving off under 1,000 calories a day, walking 26 to 40 to 50 miles a day with our packs in, you know, like whatever the African heat is out there in Madagascar. Like you can just imagine Africa just hot and muggy and no protection from the sun, man. And it was a grind.
Did any part of you say, okay, I'm just going to stop now? Or that part of your brain just turned off?
I think it probably did at some points, but I just knew that there was four other people, or there's four people altogether. One girl had left like 4 days in, it broke her. She couldn't do it. And she was at the last point to where, like, honestly, if she would have stayed around, like we probably would have died the next day. Like we were going through a super dangerous area where we couldn't stop moving and she couldn't go more than 15 minutes without stopping. And we would have had to stop inside this village, pretty much where we were just like running from people. And so we were down to three, and it was myself, Chaz, who's leading it. And then this girl, Emily, who is she was an ecologist. And we all four are from different places. She was from France. The first girl was the photographer that was from Austria. Chaz is from England and I was from America, and we all met on Instagram. So, it was cool, man. But yeah, I think had I left, I would be like, man, I'm leaving him high and dry. Like I'm leaving him alone and it's just him and Emily. And, you know, I want to protect people. I want to keep people safe. And so that's kind of where I was at with them. I was like, man, I can't leave. Like if they leave, like what's going to happen to them, you know, even though I don't know what I can do out there, but, I can at least try, you know? And yeah, I think just eventually it clicked that, man, I need to stop. Like I need to embrace the suck, you know, how that saying goes, like I need to embrace it. I need to see where I'm at. And like, when this all comes to an end, I want to be like, man, I'm so blessed and grateful to like be out here and to have done this. I don't want to finish something, anything, like let's say the triathlon, the carpool, walking Madagascar. Like, I don't want to finish it and be like, oh man, I was hating every second of it. And then what, I'm supposed to celebrate after? It's like, no, man, like you didn't earn it. Like you need to love it. You need to love every bit of it and respect it and be like, yeah, man, this is creating me to be something special. And when you're done with it, you're like, yeah, man, I went through that with a positive mindset.
I love it. And you just briefly skipped over the part where you're like, oh yeah, I got kidnapped. And you think I'm not going to follow up with that and ask about that? What happened? How'd you get kidnapped? Not many people in this world could say, oh, I got kidnapped in Africa, was it?
Egypt. Yeah. So, I started walking and I didn't even make it out of Egypt, man. My whole game plan was to go all the way through Africa, which is the equivalent of walking from San Francisco to New York to San Francisco again. Like that's how big Africa is. Like it's ridiculous. And so, my game plan was just walk across it and didn't really have much planning. But now reading books and reading more people who have done walks around that area or even cycled, it's a big thing called like Tour to Africa. Where they just cycle from Cape Town to Cairo. And a lot of people say Egypt is the hardest place to get through with the government. When you get outside of Cairo, which is like the main city where all the pyramids are and stuff, or Giza, they don't like you wandering around. And so, man, how do I just sum it up? They, I was sleeping at gas stations because they had beds there. And I woke up to, you know, some military that were around or police that were around, whoever they were. I didn't really know. But they're like, hey, get in the car and we'll like take you to the next spot. Like, where are you going? And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to Luxor. Like, I wasn't going to tell them I'm going to Cape Town. Like, that'd be so stupid. Like, if you were in San Francisco and you got picked up in like Oakland and they're like, hey, where are you going? You're like, oh, I'm going to Maine. They'd be like, no, you're not. It's like, yeah, I'm going to Maine, then I'm coming back here. Like, and so I just kept refusing the ride. I'm like, nah, man, this is my whole thing. I'm walking. Like, I'm walking to Luxor. It's only like 3 days away of a walk. And they weren't having it. I fought like tooth and nail not to get in the car, like joking around, smiling, trying to be positive. They put me in the back of the car eventually and the back of the truck. And I had a bunch of like locals come up, like taking pictures of like selfies with me in the background. Like, well, if you guys are going to get selfies, I want a selfie. So I have like this funny picture of me sitting in the back with like whoever the military is with me and all the locals in front. And I was just loving life, man, like at that point. And then, yeah, it got pretty real about like, later that day, they like put me in front of the car, kept telling me to walk. And I was like, that's cool. It's what I want to do. But like, I want to stop and I want to get water. I was walking at night because the days were 115 out. So I was walking at night and they were making me walk during the day with no water. And like kind of just like slave driving me. And I don't know if that's politically correct to say, but yeah, it was just brutal, man. Just not letting me stop. If I stopped, they yelled at me. There's points where they put me in the truck and like drove through places that I think people would see me and be like, oh, hey, what's going on? So they didn't want anybody to see what they were doing. And they like, there's one point, it's super funny, man. I'm sitting in the back of the truck. I'm sitting in the cab of the truck. Like they used to just put me in the back, put me in the cab of the truck. And there's two guys on the side of me and they give me an AK and they like put an AK-47 in between my legs when we're just sitting there like riding and I'm holding it. Like, I'm like, hey man, like I was trying to joke around. They don't speak English, but I'm like I was elbowing them. I'm one of the boys. I was trying to like Snapchat or Instagram it, but they weren't down with that. Yeah, man, I was just trying to enjoy it. And then it just got real. I eventually got to one checkpoint and they like took my passport finally. And that's like, that's your lifeline. And I stayed at that checkpoint for probably, I want to say like a full day or something, just rolling around in the heat. I got really sick because they bought me like food, but the food made me sick. And I was throwing up. I was like out both ends and trying to be like, hey man, just let me go. Like, what will it take? And I realized they were trying to bribe me. They're like, oh, like we can go to the ATM or whatnot. And I was like, I just said, no, I couldn't comprehend what they were trying to do until months later. But yeah, finally, you know, they were butting me with their guns, kind of like really, as we went on, they kept trading me off to like different people. They got more and more aggressive and more kind of like physical with me, but nobody would physically like touch me. I guess because I am big, like compared to them. So they were all kind of scared, but they would like joke around and hit me with the butt. And that really sucks. I'm like, damn it, dude. Like if I could, I would. But yeah, so we were there for like a day. I was dying, man. Like I called the embassy with my phone and they wanted my phone too. I'm not giving you my phone. I called the embassy and the lady's like, just kind of almost like making a joke out of it. She's like, why are you walking across Egypt or Africa? I'm like, does it matter why? Like we're here now. And she's like, are you alone? Like, why aren't you with people? I'm like, they have guns. I don't think it matters if I'm with people or not. Like they have guns, they win. And yeah, I was like, hey man, it was a chick. And I was like, hey, if you're not going to help me, like just give me to someone else who will. She's like, no, I am. But like, have you ever done something like this before? And I'm like, yeah, I have. I walked across Central America. I didn't. I didn't want her to win. So I was like, yeah, I have. And she's like, oh, okay. And yeah, so eventually I started talking to this cool dude who was like, hey, can you give him the phone? Like the head guy. And I walked up. I was like, I don't think he's going to want to talk to you. But, you know, I give him the phone. I try to give him the phone. I was like, hey, man, like the embassy wants to talk to you. And he's like, no. I'm like, guys, he doesn't want to talk to you. And then they're like, no, just give him the phone. He will. And I'm like, he won't. He won't. It was like trying to get a little kid to hand the phone. Like, hey, just pick it up. Talk to him. They want to talk to you. And he's just like, nah. So eventually I like threw myself down in the middle of the street and was like blocking traffic because we were at like a little like stop in the road, like a checkpoint. I like, threw myself down the middle of traffic and they didn't want me to be seen by people. So they put a bunch of barricades around me and they wouldn't touch me to drag me out. And so they put a bunch of barricades around me, like you see in the road. And I just like a little kid, like if you've seen Lilo and Stitch when she just lays on the floor, like that was who I was. Like I just scooted out on my back and rolled out like further into traffic outside. And they're like, stop. And I'm like, no. So eventually I saw there's an official van with like flags on the front that came up, and I noticed it. Like you can tell when it's an official van, like a government official or somebody important. I threw myself on top of the hood when they were kind of going by. They weren't going fast. And yeah, the guy ended up like saving me, and he's like, hey, what's going on here? Like, do you want to press charges? And I'm like, nah, man, just get me out of here. Like, I just want to be out. And so I got taken to the police station, got kind of like a report of what was going on. Like, no, I really don't want to press charges. I just want to continue walking. And they're like, all right, that's cool. Like, you can continue walking. They had a translator come in at like 1 a.m. and then to get my story. And then at 2 a.m, we went to the attorney general's office, and he's in his office still. I like bypass everybody in line at 2 a.m. Like, there's a bunch of African guys all like handcuffed together. Maybe they're like immigrants trying to like cross illegally or something, but I like bypass everybody. I go into the office, and yeah, man, since I am sick, I'm sitting there talking to him. He's super cool. Get my story down. He seems like he's vibing with me, and he's like, all right, yeah, man. Like, you know, as long as you don't press charges, like, we can let you go tomorrow and you can continue walking. We can take you wherever you want. And I was like, all right, cool, man. And so we had like a little mock trial, like court hearing, just like three of us in there. And I have the audio recording, so I wanted to know what they were saying, because they were speaking Arabic the whole time. So I put a recording on my phone, and you can still hear it where like, I just like raise my hand and they look at me. They're like, yeah. And I was like, hey, is that all right if I go to the bathroom? Like, I think I shit my pants. And they were like, what? And I was like, I think I shit my pants. Can I go to the bathroom? Because you can hear it. All of a sudden I go like, oh. So I go to the bathroom, man. And there's this guard watching me the whole time. And I'm like wiping myself at the sink because they don't have toilet paper. And I'm like, dude, like, turn around. He wouldn't turn around. I'm like, damn it, dude. I was like, all right, this is your fault, man. You're going to see some weird stuff. And so I like start wiping myself in the sink. I take off my underwear. I wash it. And I walk out with it, and I put it on the banister. Like right before I go in the little room. And he's like, no, bring it. And I'm like, no, man, that's embarrassing. Like, let me leave it. It's going to dry. I'll be out in 2 seconds. And he wouldn't let me do it. And I bring it in, and there I am walking into the room with like dripping underwear in my hands, just wet. And I'm like, this is a low point in my life. And so, yeah, they said they were going to let me go, and they didn't. The next morning I slept in a police station, and the next morning they put me in a blacked out van and drove me to Cairo. I saw it on my phone. Like, hey, where are we going, man? Like, we're going north. And then they just took me to the airport, put me in a cell underneath there. And oh, before that, I went and talked to the president of Egypt. Like, and he's like, yeah, like, you need to leave. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, he's like, I don't care where you go. You just need to get out. And I was like, all right. So yeah, there's that. And pretty much just got kicked out at that point. Now I don't know if I'm ever allowed back.
Dude, that is a crazy story. And
yeah, I was trying to fast forward it.
No, it was, I felt like I was there with you. And so what do you do at that point? You leave Egypt and you just say, okay, I'm going to continue this mission, or you're like, I'm good. I accomplished what I needed to on this continent.
I want to do it again. I want to finish it. I finished what I set out to finish. And like, eventually I'm going to, it was funny because he's like, yeah, you need to leave. And I'm like, I can go anywhere I want. And he's like, yeah. I was like, all right, well, I'll go to Sudan. In Sudan, you need a visa before you arrive. You can't arrive and get one. So I was planning on getting one at the border because it's super easy. It's really tough to get a visa for Sudan. But if you're at the border, they're kind of like, all right, just keep going, and they'll give it to you. And so I was like, yeah, I'll just go there. And I was like, I'll deal with their government. Any government will be better than you guys. Like, you guys are just a mess. And, you know, I was having fun with it all. There's a lot of jokes that I could tell from it when I was like hanging out with the cops and whatnot and like messing with them. But yeah, they, I booked a ticket to Sudan, and then they're like, no, you can't go there. And I'm like, why? You said I'd go anywhere. And they're like, no, you can't. And I'm like, all right, maybe they know I need a visa. So I was like, all right, what about Spain? Spain's right there. I'll go like recoup in Spain and like regather myself and get back after it. And they're like, no, not Spain. I'm like, I don't need a visa for, I get one on arrival, man. Like, I can go to Spain. And they're like, no. I'm like, what about San Francisco? And they're like, good. And I was like, so you're sending me home. And yeah, man, it was ridiculous. But I don't know, just tried to smile through it all, because it was just hilarious, man. I like, you know, I was walking to the gate, the flight gate, And there's a guard walking with me. And I was like, hey, man, like, what would happen if I like turned around and ran? He's like, don't. And I was like, what would happen? He's like, don't. And I'm like, all right. So we like we go down the escalator, like all the way to the gate. And then he's like, all right, go wait for it. Like it boards in 5 minutes. I'm like, all right, man, see ya. And he like turns around. And then I like hop on the escalator right behind him and I start like coming towards him. He's like, no. And I'm like, I'm just kidding, man. And I don't know how well he understood my English, but he responded to everything. But yeah, just kind of with everything, man. Like I could have hated that. And people thought I was joking. Like I made that story up because I say it like so like energetically and laughable. But it's like, what else can I do, man? Like I survived and it makes a ridiculous story. What else can I ask for? I wasn't hurt in the long run. Like I'm here, man.
What compels a person like you to do these ridiculous feats and get in these situations?
For Africa particularly, I wanted to break the stigma that I had done some travels around the world and everybody thinks that like, oh, like this country's bad. This country hates us. And I'm like, that's not true, man. Like people are so hospitable. They're more hospitable over there than people at home here. There is, for example, I went to the gym in Oregon and there's this guy in the locker room and I forget how we got started talking about like the Middle East and whatnot, or Africa in particular, which is still the Middle East. And I was like, yeah, man, like he said, why would you go over there? It's a war zone. Like they hate us. I'm like, do they really? Like they don't. Like people, the government is brutal, but the people are so insanely nice. And we just have a misconception on who, a misperception on who they are. People were inviting me into their house that we didn't even speak the same language. They were giving me breakfast. They were giving me dinner, like didn't ask for a single dime in return. Like people are so, so kind to me. And I asked him, hey man, like if I asked you to spend the night on your couch tonight, would you let me? And he's like, what? No. And I'm like, exactly, man. Like you don't trust me. And we speak the same language. Like I don't speak the same language as them, but they trust me because they see like my heart. They see the smile. They see the laugh. And like they see like who you are really inside. And it's so touching and heartwarming. I'm like, I want to break the stigma of it. I want to make it across like the world's most dangerous continent and live to tell it and be like, hey man, there's some amazing, amazing people out here that are so loving. Like we need to stop looking at it as like, you know, the Congo where you're going to get your head chopped off or something, you know, like there's so many beautiful places that we just have a misperception on because of the news.
I totally agree with the sentiment, but it's a very hard sell. When you're saying before about how you got kidnapped, it's like I set out to show that everyone's kind and then people mistreat you is sometimes how life works.
100%. I went out with that message to send and then all of a sudden I come back with, yeah, I got kidnapped. It's like, shh, that backfired. So I want to go out again. I want to get it. You know, I want to do what I set out to do. But Madagascar is the same thing, man. Like, it was a super hostile place, but the people who were nice to us were just incredible.
Yeah. I want to go and dive deep into your childhood and the formative experiences of your life. I know from doing research on you that you've had a very tumultuous childhood, and I think it will help inform a lot of the future events you do, and it shaped you clearly in a way. And yeah. So I would love to start with you getting kicked out of your house. What was that experience like? How old were you? And take me through that.
For the first time I was about like 15. You know, the housing market crashed back then. I think it was like 08 or 07. And our family lost our house in California. And that kind of like started the spiral of like my parents splitting up, which I didn't think I cared at the time. Like, whatever, like they split up. Like you hear people like they go through a divorce, parents go through a divorce and it really like destroys them. I didn't really care too much. Like I was still happy. I had all my friends in California. I didn't want to leave. Like there's this chick that I love to death. Like, you know, I put everything in that basket of like her, you know, like I put all what I didn't have at home into her. So when we broke up, that like destroyed me. And, I remember the first time I was seeing her before I left, we were supposed to leave the next day. My mom, my brother, he's 3 years older than me, drove up to Oregon to like drive all our stuff up there. And my dad and I were staying down there for a couple weeks by ourselves. And he was never really around growing up. He was always doing dealer trades with cars and going across country, or there's some like rumors about like drug deals. And we had like the president of the Hell's Angels and the sheriff at our house all the time together. Like there's funny stuff going on there. He had like Ferraris and Lamborghinis on the back of his truck. It's like, that doesn't make sense, man. You're smuggling stuff. but so he wasn't around very much, and he's really aggressive. And he was probably more aggressive than my brother growing up, because he was like, you know, you beat on the person who's just younger, and then my brother beats on me because he's getting beat on. And so, yeah, there's the first time where like my brother's not around anymore. And I came home maybe 5 minutes past my curfew, cause I was with this girl, and I'm like, hey man, I'm leaving. Like, I'm moving, like moving 500 miles away. Like, you know, I was heartbroken, and I come home and the doors are locked. The garage is locked. Like, I can't get in. Finally, like, I crawl through the window, and I like go and see my dad, and we couldn't even say suck in our house. Like, we like, oh, that sucks. Like, we got whipped. And so, you know, I think I said like the F word, and yeah, he was a big dude. He was like 6'1". I was never that big growing up. Like, in the last couple of years, I got kind of big, but he, 6'1", probably like 250. And he just picked me up and just slammed me on the, like the tiles in the house. And, you know, he like hopped on top, had his hand like just cocked back. And I was, I'm a shithead, man. Like, obviously you can tell from like Africa, like I asked for it, man. If someone's going to give it, I asked for it. And, I was like, do it. And I'm 15 years old, like punch me, do it. And, he just did. And my head bounced off the tiles, and it is what it was, man. I got a blade nose, went to my bedroom after that. And basically he just came in and was like, get out. Like, you know, where am I supposed to go? I'm 15. And, that was the first time. And then the only other times I got kicked out was when, he got sick of me. After I'd moved to Oregon, and I had moved back because I just couldn't deal with Oregon, man. I was super shy. I was super introverted. Everybody I thought that was trying to be friends with me, it was that kind of age old, like the new kid comes to school and everybody's supposed to like be nice to him at first. I was like, nah, man, like I'm not going to have any fake friends. Like, you know, so I pushed everybody away. And, I went back to California to be with everybody, and I started living in a trailer with him. And so we were super close, like close quarters all the time, like living off like one hot pocket a day and one soda a day, cause he was barely working. And to me, it was like, it didn't matter like how rough living was. Like, I could eat some food at my friend's house maybe. And I just wanted my life there. I wanted to be a kid. And there are several times where he just got sick of me, and he's like, just get out, like, just go. And I'm like, where am I supposed to go, man? So I pack a bag, and I was too embarrassed to like go to friends' houses and like ask them, like, hey man, can I like spend the night on your couch? I'm like 15, 16, 17, as this is going on. And it happens a lot. And I just was too embarrassed. Every now and then I could play it off like, hey man, like, what are you doing tonight? If I knew I couldn't go home. And, I had two houses, that same girl, that I was dating back then. And cause her parents like loved me to death, and, you know, they would have opened their doors to me in a heartbeat, but I was just embarrassed, man. Like, it was rough. And then my buddy David, who's like my best friend, he lived right around the corner. So I would find out like who's asleep so I can sneak into their backyard and go to sleep. And I remember her house, I slept in the pool shed. Like, pool sheds are not warm. I'm like trying to lay on like the floaties, man, and like cover up. And I'd wake up before everybody else, or hopefully, and sneak out and go to school. And the same thing with my buddy's house. I just slept on the side of the house. Or a big one that I always remember was like, I would sleep next to people's heaters. Like, you know, when you turn on your dryer and it pumps out the heat from the side of the house, I would find that right there. Usually it was in between the garbage cans, which really sucked, but hey man, like that blocks me from the wind, and it's a little bit of heat. So hopefully that cycle is running for like 4 hours, and it's enough to like get myself to sleep. And then I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm cold. The concrete's hard, like rolling over on it. You got to switch from hip to hip. Yeah, man, it was pretty wild. And I think back to it a lot. I think back to like making myself do it again, to like remind myself where I'm at, like to be humbled, like, not like I'm off to anywhere good now, but I think like, man, I kind of want to spend the night on the street again, just to like stay hard, to like remind myself like, hey man, this is where you're at. Like, don't ever let off the gas, because you don't want to be here again. It like terrifies me.
Yeah. Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Have you read that book?
No, but I've heard of Marcus Aurelius. Isn't that a guy from Gladiator?
He might be. So he wrote this great book called Meditations. He's probably a Roman from, I don't know, somewhere 500 BC, maybe after, but long, long time ago. And he has this idea that every 7 years you should renounce your possessions, just so you can feel what it's like to not have, to not desire. And it sounds like a similar concept to what you're talking about as well.
Yeah. Wow, man. Like that's crazy. A lot of people hear me say that and they're like, that's stupid. Why would you do that? But that's cool that, you know, someone else has said that, like that that's touching to know that. Yeah. I'm not just weird.
Nah, man. Not only is it not weird, it's like one of the most important thinkers from my perspective of all time, because his work is still being read to this day, even though he wrote it thousands of years ago. So yeah. You're clearly something in you. Clearly,
I'm on the right path somewhere.
Right wavelength. So at what point did you send the message to your friends? Is this around this time when you send the message to your friends saying you're going to kill yourself?
Those times are just such a blur. Yeah, a lot of that part of my life is just a blur with whatever happened to my mom. I'm sure we'll dive into that. But like everything was a blur around there from 15 to probably like 19 or 18. I just don't really recall like timelines of stuff. But it was around that time, like where I was probably 17 or 16. I'd say it's about, I can't place which one was first or last, but that was probably after I had slept outside all those times. And that was a rough one. I was just calling for attention, man. I just wanted to know someone loved me. My dad had moved the trailer somewhere else a little bit better, but still like embarrassing, like you don't want people to know you live in a trailer and always smell like smoke. You go to school and people think that I like smoke or I reek of it, man. People in the gym would know it. Like people would say it. It's just embarrassing. I just didn't want that. And I don't know what it was one day. I was like, hey, like I'm going to kill myself, guys. Like I understand this is something that you guys don't want, to be a part of. If you don't want to get closer to me and like, even though we're already like best friends, like, I can understand if you guys don't want this hurt and you guys want to disconnect right now, I'll understand. But if you wouldn't mind, like, I'd like to just come and say bye and have one last time hanging out. And, I'm going to cry. I stopped by like the family's house that took me in. Basically when I was getting kicked out all the time, they're like, hey, like come and live with us. And my dad, he was ruthless, man. He would kick me out and he would find that I'm like staying there and he would call the cops and tell them to come pick me up and be like, hey, my son run away. Or, he'd like suck up like, oh, I'm trying to like get him home and he won't come home. And I'm like, no, you don't, man. Like he wanted me to suffer. And, that house was like a savior to me. Like whenever I go to California now, like that's my home. Like I always stop by there. I was just there before this weekend driving up from San Diego. And like, man, it's the best place in the world for me. And like where everything really clicked, up to that point, I had never loved myself. I was always so hardened by like my dad and my mom. I didn't know what love was. I never loved myself. I never really heard it. Sure we say it, but I just never felt it. And the life with my brother he was never really around. He was always in juvenile hall or at some like boarding school or getting arrested every night. Like he was brutal. And obviously when he was home, we were trying to kill each other. Like literally. And, I stopped by this house, man. And the mom sat me down and she was just like, almost like metaphorically, like I said in my post, like she slapped it into me. She's like, JT, like you need to love yourself. Like stop. Like I love you. Everybody loves you. And like that right there just hit something in me. And man, at that point it just changed. I'm like, I really need to, like, I need to love myself more. And over the years I forgot it, obviously, as like time goes on, I had the same tendencies to like end my life. But yeah, man, every now and then someone will tell me like, yeah, man, we need to love ourselves. And we get told so often that like, in order to love yourself or in order to love everybody else, you have to love yourself first. But when we say we love ourselves, I think you said this to Hector where you're like, yeah, man, talk yourself up. Like, and he's like, no, man, it sounds cocky. It's like, no, man, say it, because we don't do it enough. We get told that we're cocky or we're arrogant for being like, yeah, man, I love myself. Like my life's freaking rad. Like I love who I am and who I've became. And people are like, oh, that sounds cocky. It's like, no, it's not. The only way that I can love you is if I love myself first. And I am. So we tell each other to love yourself so you can love others. But then when you say you do, you're like, turned down for it. It's weird, man.
Dude, I just have such love in my heart for you because of the situation in which you were raised and brought up in to transform yourself and become an example. And we'll get into it in the future of how you're transforming. Take me to that moment of the mother telling you, hey, JT, you got to love yourself. What changed in you and what actions did you do differently in the following week, month, year to get you on the right path? Because it's one thing to say it, but it seems like it clicked in that moment for you. So what did you do?
I just started thinking differently, man. I started valuing my life. I felt love for the first time at like 16 or 17, however old that was, like 16, I finally felt love. And I was like, man, like this is special. Like I didn't want to let anybody down now. Like these people really love me. Like I don't want to let go of them. I want to make them proud, you know? And that was a big thing with my mom. Like everything I do is to like make her proud. And I see that people love me now and I just want to love them back. I want to give it back. And I don't know. I don't think anything really changed too heavily. It got me out of that dark spot right then and there. And I think started the spark. I think it definitely started the spark of where I wanted to go and where I needed to go to just keep moving to the next day. It got me. That's my big thing with everything I do is like, just make it till tomorrow, man. Hopefully tomorrow will be there. Like today might suck. The next day might suck, but eventually you're going to reach a day that's great. And like, you just need to keep fighting for it. And that's what that did for me is it lit a fire deep inside me. And it got me till tomorrow. And then from tomorrow, I built off that. And I built off every single day trying to bring myself up and bring myself to it, to just love myself and to love other people and to give back because people were just constantly giving to me, man. I would text my friends all the time and just use them as like a beating post, man. I would be so negative and always complain and whine to them. And I didn't value them. I didn't treat them how I should have. And I didn't love them. I kept using them as like a beating post. And finally, it's like, man, I love that you're there for me, but I can't keep coming to you with problems. Like, if I'm going to give you the bad, I need to give you the good of my life. And all I'm doing is giving you the bad. I'm not giving you the love that you need or that you deserve because you're an amazing friend. So that's what really changed. Like, hey, man, I'm going to dial this back. I'm going to hold all this in and I'm just going to give everybody else love because, yeah.
You raised such an important point, which is that it's very difficult to love ourselves until someone else sees the light within us and lights that spark. And it's so, so important. And on that last point you were talking about, I want you to tell the story of you at the MMA gym. And there's a kid about 3 or maybe 5 years younger than you. And you serve as that model for him. And I'd love for you to tell it here.
Yeah, man, that's touching that you know that, that you've, you know, read that or listened to it. That's touching. Thank you. Yeah, he was, you know, I think I was probably like 18, 19, 20 around there and probably like 19 or 20. And yeah, he came in and that was right after like my suicide attempts at like 18 and 19. And so, yeah, he came in and he was still in high school. I think he's a freshman maybe. And he was struggling a lot. He was super, super quiet. And you see this confidence that MMA builds. And he came in with his head down and super shy. And within like a week or a month, man, he was walking around, like talking shit to us, like giving us shit, like telling us he's gonna like choke us out. And he's so confident. He's walking around with his chest high. He's not afraid to talk to the older dudes who are like the top dogs in the gym. He's like, nah, man, like I'm comfortable here. Like I can defend myself. Or so he thinks he could at that point, you know, but he's got that confidence in him. And, you know, I think that's a big thing is we all need to believe in ourselves. And he finally started believing in himself through that. And he kind of opened up and, you know, was saying that he wanted to kill himself and he was really depressed. And I'm like, man, like I'm going to sound like the adult. And he looks at my life at this point, I'm traveling around the world. Like I just got back from Iceland, like from the sick trip, like road tripping around it. And he looks at my life. He's like, man, your life is so sick. Like, I wish I had a life like yours, but like, I just can't get out of my head, man. And pretty much sounds exactly like how I did when I tried. And I was like, man, I'm going to tell you something. Like every adult told me like, stop, like you're selfish. They kept saying it was selfish. I'm like, you don't understand. Like now it's putting more pressure on me. When I want to kill myself, you're telling me it's selfish. I'm like, you don't understand how much pain I'm feeling. And I just want to get rid of it. It's selfish for you to tell me it's selfish because you don't understand. And now you're putting more pressure on me. I already feel the life coming, world coming down my shoulders. Now you're pushing even further on it. You're telling me that I'm letting you down now. And so I was like, hey man. And parents would tell you, hey, I know where you've been. Growing up's hard. Being a teenager's hard. And I'm like, as a kid, I'm like, no, man, no, you don't. You don't know what I'm dealing with. And most of the time they didn't. Maybe they did. But, you know, as a kid, we're always right. And I was like, hey, man, I'm going to tell you exactly what you're thinking right now. And like, I'm not just going to be every adult that like tells you how to deal with it. Like, I'm going to tell you exactly what you're thinking. And I just threw it out there. And he's like, shit, man. Like, yeah, that's like, that's spot on. And I'm like, yeah, man, because I was you. Like, I was you back then. And I don't want you to go down the same road and accidentally be successful in taking your own life. Like, I don't want you to ever have to get to that. And I had the same conversation with him about after from there on out, we'd always talk. He would call me when he was really down and he would text me and always like confide in me. And I was always there. I'd never miss a call because I know how important it is. Like that missed call could be his life. And I just told him one day, I was like, hey man, like I love you to death, but like you need to stop just using me as a beating post. Like all you're doing is coming to me with the negatives and the bad stuff and what's happening and just complaining about life. Like I love you and I want to be there for that. If you have issues, come to me. 100% run right to me. But I want to hear about the good stuff in life. I want to hear about like you acing a test in school, you talking to a girl. Like I want to hear about you getting a girlfriend, going to sports. I want to hear about every single good thing you have in your life, man. Things you're pumped about. I want to be there for both. And right now you're using me as a beating post. I'm not even your friend and I want to be your friend. And so that like really clicked. And now he texts me all the time, just like, you know, good stuff. And every now and then it's like, hey man, I'm feeling kind of down. And we kind of talk and basically just told him, like, hey man, like I want you to do what I did for you. Like the reason why I'm telling you this and I want to connect with you. And he looks at my life, like I said, as being so sick. I'm like, dude, make your life that. You don't, everybody thinks that like, oh, my life's so sick. Like you'd have to mimic it. You don't have to mimic it. Just do your own, like figure out the equivalent for you and make it happen. His is like lizards and like get like reptiles. Like he's so nutty about it, man. And it's cool. So like make that your life, man. Make it so you're just happy nonstop every single day. And you're going to see, man, one day all I ask of you is like when you're my age or when you're older and you're going to have a kid come along that is just like you, like you came to me and I just want you to repay the favor. I want you to open up to him and hold and like just hold him, man, and be like, I love you, dude. Like you're here. I see you. And a lot of, and his was the same man, same way, man. Like people just, his family didn't see him. His parents were going in a divorce. He was just that kid like thrown in the middle of it. People just ignored and got passed back and forth and just nobody saw him. And I'm like, man, I see you. You're special. Like, and he was, man, he is such a sick kid. So yeah, that's kind of where that went.
How does someone find their thing?
Trial and error. A lot of people see what I do. Like you said, the whole, you know, runner, strongman, astronaut, like I try everything, man. People always like, well, so what do you do? Like, how do you go from like traveling around the world to like pulling a car to like doing 24 hours, like all these different things. And it's like, cause I just try, man. Like I try new things and you know, we have to keep trying new things to keep our brains, to keep our minds stimulated. We can't just be like, oh, hey, my thing. I mean, maybe you could be like, oh, my thing's jiu-jitsu and that is going to heal me forever. But for me personally, like that ran out. MMA, it ran out for me. It healed me in the time, but eventually it healed all the demons that I needed to and that it could. And I needed to find another outlet. And that's where these endurance sports came in. Now they're healing me. Who knows how long it'll last, but like, I'm not afraid to try something new until I find like what just fulfills my heart's every desire. And at the base of it, it's helping other people. No matter what I do, it's going to be helping other people. No matter if I become, you know, an astronaut, really. And like, I'm going to donate everything I can to helping other people, or I become a chess master or a badminton master. Like, I'm just going to keep trying stuff, man. It's trial and error. You can't be afraid to fail.
I love that. And so you said before that when you go to a deep, dark place and you're on a really difficult journey of a run or whatever it may be, you think of two things and you kind of passed over what those two things were in previous podcasts, but I'd love to explore. Is one getting kicked out of your house? Is two, like, tell me what those two things, if you don't mind. Man.
Yeah. The main thing for running, I think Hector asked me this when we were on his 200, man. And man, there's some good questions. Like there are good people down there, man, asking some deep questions that you just never like think about. And he's like, what do you think about when you're swimming or when you're running or you're biking? I'm like, swimming, I don't really think about anything. It's so sensory deprived that you're just kind of like in your zone and in like a flow state. But running, like you can't swim angry. Like you can try to bike angry, but that doesn't really work. Like you're going to go too fast and get scared. But like running, you can run angry. Like you can sprint, you can stop. Like you can run angry. You can lift angry. And for running, for me, it's thinking about my mom. As illogical as it is and just impractical, like I was down in California when she got stabbed. And I remember the phone call. I remember where I was. I was at that house that took me in. And the mom was actually driving me back to my dad's trailer. And that's when I got the phone call. That's why I'll never miss a phone call again, because my brother called me as I was doing homework. Like I never did homework. Like that's why I get kicked out of school. Probably. I'm like, man, last time I did homework, something bad happened. So yeah, I was doing homework with like my sister, I call her, and my brother called me. He's like, that's weird. He never calls me. Like, I'll just pick it up later. And he left me a voicemail and I listened to it on the drive home, and he's like crying. You know, I've never heard him cry ever, like ever. And I like call him back and he can't get like a word out. And then like he hangs up and I'm like, I just had this hunch that something happened to my mom. And eventually I can't remember like from there on it was a blur, man. I can't tell if it was my mom or my aunt that picked up and called me again and told me, and the phone just flew out of my hand. As the car was moving, I like started screaming, and like the mom like pulled over, and as she was pulling over, I jumped out of the car as it was moving. And I was just like yelling at the sky, like, why? Like, you know, like my mom was the strongest person in the world and like the nicest person, you know? So yeah. To hear that happen, like, you know, you think someone's dead, like you don't even know the details of it. And let alone to figure out, like, it was seven times, like the guy even had a gun. Like, it built up as we figured out more information. And, like, I'm 500 miles away, man. Like, there's no way I could have made it. There's no way I could have, even though I was there, man, I was like 16. Like, what could I have done? And like, that's what I think about running. Like right now I'm getting emotional. Like when I run and it gets hard, I think about this and I think like, man, I should have ran faster. Like I should have been there. And like, I run harder. Like I run angry. And, you know, it might not be the best way, but eventually, like, those demons get out, you know, like, eventually I overcome that. I play it out in my head. And I guess it's just a process of, like, forgiving myself that I wasn't there and I wasn't able to defend her. And that's where, like, MMA came in, man. Like, all I want to do is protect people I love now. And that is every training session I figure out or I battle with, like, I'm getting better. I'm getting stronger. I'm getting faster. Like, I will always make it to someone in time. Like, Hector and his sister said something after the run, like, you know, that they actually, like, they're like, yeah, man, there's something about you. Like, we felt it. We felt like that whenever we saw you, I knew I was safe. Like, you were always there. You're always going to bat for me. And like, you were like that light, you know, that I needed. If things got dark, like, you were always there. And there was a situation where we had to like run out with water. And like, that was my thing, is I'm like running with this jug out to him and he talks about it. He hypes it up, but like, I'm just running out to him. Like, that's what I trained for, is like, I'm running with jugs in my hands, like trying to get out to him as fast as possible, because like, that's that like protector mindset where I'm like, shit, he's hurting. Like, he's in trouble. I get to him and he obviously wasn't, but like everybody said he was. And I'm like, first off, save Hector. And then I'll save everybody else after. But like, he's the primary in this that we need to save. And, you know, if you're someone I love, if you're with me, like, I will go, like, you know, I'll battle tooth and nail for you. Like, I will go to bat for you every single time. And, you know, I just battle with that kind of thought while I'm running, you know, that I need to get better for people. I need to be able to perform when people need me to.
What are the days and weeks after you finding out your mom gets stabbed? How are you suppressing that? What is your mental state like? Are you suppressing it? Are you talking to someone about it?
Yeah, man. So the next day I tried going to school. I don't know whose idea that was, but I went to school and I made it through. Like, we had a rally in the morning and everybody was making fun of me. They thought I was just super, super high because like my eyes were so bloodshot and like just red from crying all night, man. And, I just cried all night, man. Like, didn't know what to think. Like, nobody could reach me. Like, I was in my own head and all I could hear was like more stuff. Like, okay, someone would call like the house I was at and they'd be like, hey, she got stabbed seven times, and somebody would say it and I'd be like, fuck, like, she's dead. And then someone would be like, oh, he has a gun. And I'm like, shit. Like, you know, it was just one thing after the other. And I go to school, I couldn't do it. I had to leave. And my aunt comes and picks me up. She drives me to the San Francisco airport. That was the first time I've ever been on a plane. And I flew that hour up to Bend that day. And like I said, like, we haven't dove into the relationship with my brother, but like, him and I, like, we tried killing, like, when I say, like, people hear like, oh yeah, brotherly love and we fight. Like, no, there's no love. Like, there was knives, there was handcuffs, there was torching, waterboarding, there's everything, man. And like, it was brutal. We hated each other pretty much. Like, we just, every day was a war zone. And, he picks me up from the airport and that was the first time that we ever said, I love you. Like, wow. Everything after that was just squashed. Like, we realized that like, we're the only ones we have in life now. Like, we have a grandma and like my aunt sort of is there, but she's not really. Like, really now we realize, like, in our core family, it's just like, you know, my mom, myself, and Buddy, my brother, and then like my grandma, and it's like, cause she's the one who took us in Oregon when like we needed somewhere to stay. And so, yeah, it was, that was the first time we just hugged over the middle console in the car. And he's like, well, we just said, I love you. And that was ever since then, like, we've been cool. Like everything got squashed. We realized everything before that was so minute and that life is so precious. And like, hey, if she dies today, like we only have each other. Like, so that was a really like pivotal moment in my life with him. But I go to the hospital and everybody has kind of seen her already and know what state she's in. And I'm 16, right? Or like, remember, like I go in and the doctor's like, you know, hey, like you can't cry. Like if you go and you see her and you cry, she'll cry. And if she cries, she'll die because she's wrapped up in like 12 blankets. She's every machine you could possibly like have like hooked to her. She's already small, but she got down to like 70 pounds because of all the blood she lost. Like it was just like the most like horrifying picture I could imagine. And like 16, like it's either I go in there and I don't go in there and I don't see her and she dies, or I go in there and I like see her one last time. And like to sit there, like I'm crying now, but like I didn't cry for like 5-6 years after it, man. Like I couldn't, like I had put up this steel sheet when I saw her. Like I just learned how to like grit my teeth and bite down and be like, no, no tears are coming out. And to tell a 16-year-old they can't cry, like, or it's going to kill their mom. Like it destroyed me. And like, I think that's where a lot of depression came from, is I bottled everything up. I didn't let anything out for, you know, years. And eventually that like culminated into me trying to kill myself. Once it all did come out, I'm like, shit, man, like my life is terrible. Like there's been no happy points, man. Like it was fighting with my brother, him trying to kill me. Then it was like my dad. And then it was my mom. Like there was always something. And I was like, this isn't life, man. Like, this isn't fun. And so it was a really hard point in life there. Like just the weeks after that, you know. And I remember the husband that she had, or the boyfriend she had at the time, the one who stabbed her was an ex-boyfriend who like my dad kind of manipulated. Like I was living with my dad, so I knew he was talking to him. And my dad is the most manipulative person in the world. And we couldn't ever like prosecute him for it or find him guilty of it. But we all knew that he like played a part in it and basically like orchestrated the event to stab my mom. And yeah, it was, she had this new boyfriend. She's always dating somebody. I hate it. Like she's dating somebody now. And I'm like, can you stop? But she ended up marrying this guy and he just passed away like a couple months ago, but their relationship had like fizzled out years ago. But he just passed away. And I remember when I met him, I was so sick of people. Like I was like, man, I'm so sick of like, my mom should just be single forever, not talk to anybody ever again. And this guy like takes me to the cafeteria. He's like, hey man, like, let's go have a talk and like try and be friends with me in this moment. And it's all about him. He's trying to be like super like, oh, I'm this. And I just stop him. I'm like, hey man, like, I don't care who you are, but if you hurt my mom, I'm going to kill you. And he was like, oh, okay. No, I would never. I was like, I don't care if you understand, like, I will kill you if you hurt my mom. And that was like the one moment where I'm like, I'm officially like the father of this family. Like I needed to take over the role as like the man of the house and like be somebody. My brother was still doing drugs all the time and, you know, shooting up and overdosing. He overdosed like probably over 15 times. And like, he, you know, we didn't have a father figure. We didn't have a man of the house. And like, I realized that I needed to be that guy. So I did at that moment. It was like, I'm here to protect everybody and like to die if I need to do it.
So how do you then begin to transform yourself and overcome all these struggles that you face?
In the cage really helped. Like when I started fighting after that, I just started fighting out those demons that, you know, I don't know. I had a lot of anger in me, but I didn't look angry when I fought. Like most people thought I was like asleep. Like if you look at Fedor Emelianenko, the Russian dude, like he just looks like he's asleep. Like I knew I was just in there to do business. And like, I was like kind of fearless when it came to it. So I'm like, man, like there's no weapons. Like shit, man. I fought my brother every day with weapons. Like this guy just has fists. Like that's an easy day for me. And, I knew there was more pain. Like I've endured more pain. And at that point I just had to become hard and like figure out something to push my limits, something to keep me going, keep my mind stimulated. And that was kind of fighting at the point, to overcome it, to get past it. But yeah, there were some dark times even before that.
And then how do you evolve past fighting? And what was the next stage of your evolution?
Actually, it's kind of weird. So fighting, I just like, it was a passion, man. I dedicated every minute of the day to it for years and years and years. And by the end of it, I took one last fight and I just knew the passion wasn't there. And I respect the sport so much that I knew it wasn't there anymore. And I wasn't respecting it and giving it the time it deserved, but I'd go fight and I'd win. And I'm like, that's not right, man. I'm like, I'm winning, but there's somebody out there who wants this opportunity and is going to cherish it more than I am. So I'm going to step down. And so that's kind of where I gave up on it or just passed it along. And I'll do like jiu-jitsu tournaments here and there because they're fun. Like, but that's it. I'd love to get back into fighting again, like just one more or something. Like there's always one more. We always say one more. But yeah, it'd be fun. Let's see. From there, I was going to school. I was in college going for engineering. And that was another thing that people just told me I couldn't do. The only reason I went for engineering is because I got kicked out of high school as well, like in sophomore year. So I never graduated. And so people just always called me stupid. Everybody thought I was a jock and like, you can't be smart if you're a basketball player or like if you're a fighter, you can't be smart. And so I Googled, the hardest degrees you can get. And besides being a surgeon, engineering was there. So I just went to school for that. And I, zoomed in on that and was like, I need to financially be able to support my family. And I worked four jobs a day. I worked three jobs. The fourth one was fighting and that was still a full time. Like I was training like 8 to 10 hours a day with three more jobs. Every day was filled. I was never sleeping to the point I started like hearing voices in my head and I had to go see a therapist for it because I thought I was going crazy. And really it was because I was never sleeping. Like sleep is so valuable and so underrated. And so finally I like had to take care of myself and realize like, hey man, I need to like get off the gas a little bit. Like I wanted to be there to support my mom financially if she couldn't go back to work and just be there. I wanted to like bring them up and bring them to the top. I've always had that dream of like being somebody and being able to like support them. And so she didn't have to work. And yeah, so she still works like crazy, like two jobs, doesn't need to, but she still does. And yeah, man, she still goes back to work in the same exact place that she got stabbed every single night. Like I was like, man, most people run from that. Most people from an accident, they leave the city, they leave the state, like they don't go back. And I'm like, she literally stayed in the same place and stood her ground. And like, when I face tough times, I'm like, my mom's tough as shit, man. And she's like 100 pounds. I'm like, I'm 200. Like I need to be able to be tougher than her, like she can't outwork me, but she does. And that's all I'm trying to do is like keep up with her. And, I see how strong she is. And it's not about size. It's all about mental. She is strong enough mentally to go back to work every single night in that same exact spot. And yeah, from there, I think the pivot after school was I met this chick and we were going to get married. And like, I was going to propose to her the next day and she broke up with me and I was heartbroken. And I was like, I'm done. I sold my truck. I sold my motorcycle. And I had that whole like life figured out, man. I'm going to school. I got a car. I got this, like, I'm going to get a degree. I'm going to start a family. Like I had all like mapped out like cookie cutter life, what I thought I had to do. And I thought that was success. I thought that was where we were all supposed to be. And I just booked a one-way plane ticket to Bali. I didn't know Bali was like the honeymoon capital of the world, but like I'm heartbroken. And 3 weeks later I fly out to Bali and that's the second plane I've ever been on. The first plane was the one to my mom. Like now I'm on this plane across the world with no connections, no plan or anything, no ticket back. And yeah, that's kind of where my life definitely changed. I met a group of like kind of just misfits, man. Like they were all British really, but they had all came together the same way. They, two of them started and then they became friends and then the third person hopped on and eventually it was so infectious and there was just such a good community that we all started traveling to each other for months and they reinstilled my love for life. They really like shocked it back into me that like, I don't know, just that kid in me again. Like I wasn't so introverted anymore. I was an extrovert. I was having fun. I was loving life. I'm seeing the world. And like, I escaped from that dark place. Like every time I go back down to Petaluma, California, where I was born, it hits me every time, man. It's such a dark place for me. Like that's why I want to finish the triathlon there. Like I want to finish the triathlon crossing the Golden Gate Bridge, which is just like 30 minutes away from home as like, it's a metaphor for my life. Like I'm finishing it where I started life and like I'm overcoming it. And yeah. So that's about where traveling took me, man. Traveling reinstilled that kid in me that got lost after, you know, the beatings at like 15 and my parents splitting up. I mean, that didn't affect me. It was more so my dad beating me and like kicking me out at 15. Like, I think that's from 15 to when I went on my first trip at like 22 or 23 was just a dark, dark time. And I lost who I was. And I knew I lost who I was. Like, I hated myself. I hated who I'd become, but I didn't know how. I thought that's just life. Like, this is who I've become. I've become an adult. I've become bitter and angry and dark. And going on that trip changed my life. It just instilled something in me again that, you know, to love.
What do you think the person who loved life and started to love life at, like you did at 23 or 24, it sounds like, what would you have told that? What would that person have told yourself at 20?
Oh, man. I don't know. I guess there's always the, like the cliche or not like, but just like, man, like, keep fighting, like keep going. You'll make it till tomorrow. And like, this is where you're going to be in the future. You know, if you just keep going, like that's really it. But I think there's probably something else I can think of, but that's really just like plain and simple, black and white. Like, hey man, keep going. Like, you know, this is the title of Hector's podcast. Like, keep going, man. Like, go. It's just, it's the only thing you can do in life is just keep going, man. Don't stop. Like, it will get better.
Yeah. I like that. And as you progress, you're 23, 24, you have a new sense and love for life that these traveling partners give you in some sense and you give them. What's the next step? What do you do? How do you take that energy and apply it to your own life in some way?
I just wanted to see the world and I wanted to show everybody the world. And that eventually escalates the whole Africa trip, like going full circle. Mm-hmm. I just want to see the world at that point. I wanted to live life. I lost my childhood. I wasn't a child like ever, you know. I was getting beat by my brother and never thought I'd make it to see the next day. And I just didn't have a childhood. And so that was like, I get to live again, man. People see like, oh man, you have so much fun. You're always doing this. And like, I've seen the world. I'm like, yeah. But for the first 23 years, I was in an absolute hell. Like, I was fighting for my life every single day or thinking, you know, someone's life is going to get taken. Like, it just, yeah, that it's just kind of, yeah.
So many similarities between your story and David Goggins's. With just how he describes his childhood and how he describes the first 20 years of his life and how he says that no one would trade places with him. And it was just absolutely brutal. But now he's reached a point where he's grateful for all those because it made him into the person he is, which is a crazy thought to think about.
Yeah, man. I say it all the time. Like, everything I've been through, I'd never trade for the world because I would never want, I'd be jealous if someone was in my shoes, you know, like. And that's kind of life that I've wanted to make, something that I'm super stoked about. I'm jacked about every day that like I get to live this life. And like, I'd be jealous if someone else is in it and I'm not in it. And like, even though there's hard points in my life, it shaped me to who I am today. If I didn't go through all those struggles, if I didn't go through those beatings from my brother or my dad, like who knows how well I would have done in fighting. Maybe I wouldn't have even got started because I would have just been weak-minded. Like every day I had to like keep alive fighting with my brother. Like, man, I can like just keep breathing. Like, I can make it. And that happened in the cage all the time. Like, man, just keep going, like keep breathing. And if I didn't have those struggles, who knows what fighting would have happened. Maybe I would have never got there. And that would have never gave me the confidence that it did to travel the world or to hold my chest up high and be like, yeah, man, like I'm a bad dude. Like, let's do this, you know? So you know, yeah, all those shaped me.
It's so fascinating how our biggest obstacles and biggest struggles can turn into our greatest strengths. And you're proving that every day. And, you know, we talked about Hector, and Hector is a friend of yours and someone you've spent time with in person and also online and made friends on the internet. And something I find so fascinating is how these friendships can be just, they can start online and then they could turn into real brotherhoods, it seems like, in person. Yeah, talk for to sure. me about that journey for you, because I think a lot of people might look at that and be like, wow, I wish I could make friends like that and create real relationships with people online. What do you do that allows you to make connections with people?
Easy. Be yourself, man. Like, be honest, be truthful, be yourself. I have it like tattooed on my wrist. Stay true. Like, I got it because I thought my brother was going to die when I was like 16. So I was like, oh, I want to get the same tattoo as him. And it's like, man, just stay true to who you are. Like every time I look at him, every time I'm going off the wrong path, like I gotta stay true to who I am. And by being that person, you attract like-minded people. People can see if you're fake or not. And, you know, the Madagascar group, like we eventually connected over Instagram and then went on like a crazy trip for a lifetime. And, I don't really talk to the girl too much anymore, but like, I talked to Chaz quite a bit, but we still have never really met up, but like we're cool. He's like probably the age gap is a difference, but different points in life. I'm still traveling. He's 45, like I'm 29, but, Hector, yeah, man, it was, we just got connected from friends of friends of friends and be like, hey man, you're like-minded individuals. Like you guys should get together on something. And yeah, man, the second we met, man, it was like, it was immediate bro love from like the first hand slap, like to hug. It was so cool. I'm glad we got a picture of it. And, yeah, man, it was from the second we met, it was like, yeah, man, like we're family. It was, definitely life-changing being with them out there in San Diego. I was always a lone wolf. Like, let's say he's big about the wolf pack, you know, like I was always a lone wolf. I love that mindset of like, you know, I'm just out here grinding by myself. Like I don't need anybody. And I, you know, it basically how I live my life, like fighting with my brother. No one came to save me, man. Fighting in the cage. There's no one to have my back, with my dad, with my mom. Like I had to be the man of the house. Like there's no one to have my back, man. A lot of people just disappeared and went into the shadows. And same thing that Hector said, man, like, oh, when he started making that shift in his life, a lot of people started disappearing and talking bad about it. And that was what happened with me. When I started fighting, a lot of my friends who I was out partying with, going to bonfires with all the time, were like talking shit about it. And, you know, you eventually make that transition and you keep people and you don't keep people, but I became such a lone wolf. And going down to San Diego was, I think I was driving back and I was like, man, that's probably the second like life-changing moment I've had in my life, where the first one was going to Bali and meeting everybody. That reinstilled my love and passion for life and like that inner kid in me. And second was meeting Hector and the wolf pack down there that reinstilled that, like, hey man, I don't need to go through this alone. Like I can, and I've proven it, but I don't need to. And I'm so much stronger with the community behind me. And like, they were so loving, like every single person we met, man, this is probably one of the special things I've ever been a part of. Every person we met, it's like, bam, man, like we're best friends. We're talking for hours, like everybody's family right away. And it was just such good vibes and realizing, like, hey man, like it's good to be a part of a pack. Like, yeah, you go through life alone, but you don't need to. It's so much funner when you add people into it. And, yeah, we connected online because we were just honest. Like we weren't trying to put up a facade of who we were or what we're trying to do. You're not fake. Like, you know, I'm going to open up who I am. You're going to open up who you are. And if we connect, we connect. If not, who cares, you know? But we did. And there was just immediate love, man. Like I see his heart and he sees everybody else's.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about you is you're so open and honest and vulnerable about your truths and about your past. Why do you think you are that way?
Cause someone needs to hear it, man. Like growing up, I needed to hear it. And nobody told me it. Everybody just told me I was selfish or like I was doing something wrong, but nobody is honest with me. And I see that honesty and vulnerability helps. Like, just be open, man. And I think there's strength and vulnerability. There's such this like, toxic masculinity that we can't cry, you know, and we can't be vulnerable and open up. Real men hide their feelings. Like, no, man, like I always say it all the time, man. If anybody wants to come and fight me, they can. Like, I'll cry right in front of you and then I'll fight you. Like, I have no problem with it. Like, it doesn't define you as who you are as a man. You know, you can be a bad dude and still be vulnerable and still open up, because that right there takes real strength. And that's what everybody in San Diego had. Everybody was honest and open. Like, people would tell you the craziest stories. They'd be like, there's a couple stories that like made my jaw drop. And I was like, wow, I never expected that to come out of your mouth, like your past. And two, like, I just love you. Like, you are such an incredibly strong person for what you went through. And then the fact you just shared it with a complete stranger. I think just people need to hear it, man. And through that, it helps me. I have people reach out who I don't even know that'll see the news articles or hear this and like feel comfortable enough to open up to me. They don't open up to anybody, but they'll be like, hey man, I see your vulnerability and like, you know, there's strength in it. And they open up to me. Like they'll say not the craziest things, but they'll just like the most open and honest things about, oh, my kid wants to, you know, kill himself. He's really depressed. Like, can you talk to him? And I'm like, yes, 100%. Like, thank you. Thank you for having the fact you're comfortable to say this to me. That's all I want. And by me opening up myself, it allows people to be comfortable and use me as like the soundboard and kind of someone to hug, lean on.
everybody's got a story that we know nothing about is kind of what I think about. And then when you actually hear it, because you're vulnerable, because you're open yourself, it's like, oh my God, people are hurting inside. And sometimes we just need someone to share it with. And you being that light is such a powerful thing, especially because you've gone through it yourself, especially because you're 6'4 and 200 pounds, especially because of who you are as a person in our society. I think it's especially important of what you're doing and really incredible. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, man.
Thank you.
Talk to me about this. You ran 200 plus miles with Hector, or you ran a portion of it. What'd you do and how'd that work?
So basically I never met him. I was out in London before this. I really wanted to get out to Bigfoot, or at least one of these. I was out in London and he was up in like my neck of the woods in Washington. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could get there. Couldn't make it happen. And I have a little break in between work, to get down to San Diego. I was going to go to Tahoe, but, he's down in San Diego, and I flew into Oregon, spent like 2 days here, and then drove 16 straight hours down to him. Got there at 1 a.m, woke up at 4 or 5 and started running with him, man. That was the first time I met him. And then after that, it was like, I did about 150. I don't know where I landed. I stopped counting after 100 because in my head, I was being selfish to an extent. I think we all were, to where we want to get miles. We want to be like, oh yeah, man, I did this. But really, it's not about that. It's about Hector finishing this race. And, you know, I did about 57 straight with him on the first day. And I haven't been running very much because of an injury, but I'm thinking like, man, whatever this guy's going through, like, I need to keep pushing. Like, I don't know how he views me. Maybe he views me as someone tough. And if he sees me drop out because I'm hurt, then like, that is going to let in a little voice of like, you know, doubt maybe. Like for me with swimming, like I don't want anybody doubting my swimming abilities, because even though I don't accept it and like, oh, don't listen to the naysayers, it is at least a little chip away at your mental dam. And so I was like, I can't be that person chipping away at his, like, he's got so much more to go. And I was like, I was really hurt, but I was like, you know what? I want to quit on my own terms. Like I want to quit when I'm ready to quit. And so that got me to 57 instead of, you know, 30, I think is what it was when the heat destroyed me. I'm like, I want to quit on my own terms. And at 57, I bowed out and was like, all right, man, like, this is all you. Like, you know, I don't want him to see me hurt. I don't want him to have like any worry. He's such a nice guy. He worries about everybody else. And if he sees someone bow out because they're hurt, like, that's going to be in his mind the whole time, because he's so giving and so loving. It takes his mind off the mission. And all, we need to keep everything, his mind, like, dialed in, laser focused on it. And so around 100 miles, I just stopped counting, because I'm like, man, who cares anymore? Like, I see this guy who's at 150 now or something, and he's still plugging away. Like, this is broken. Every single one of us, every single one of us is bowed out because we're just like broken, and he is still going. Never skip the beat. Never stop smiling. Mainly, like we were saying about enjoying the process of where you're in, and he's never stopped smiling. It was the most inspiring thing, life changing thing, to be there and pick his brain. And I think what pushed me to get so many more miles is, one, I want to just pick his brain. He's such a cool guy to talk to, man. It's like meeting somebody you look up to now. Like, man, I just want to pick your brain. You're an expert in this field. Like, you're one of the top dogs. Like, I can learn so much from you. And I learned so many things that I never thought I would have learned. It wasn't just like what gear to wear, or like how to do stuff. It was the mindset. He helped me so much. It's ridiculous. But I think I just wanted to be with him in case anything happened. The only time I ever backed out of like miles was when I saw he had someone with him that would like take care of him. And sure, like, I don't know him, man. Like, I just met him, but like, I love you. And like, I'm going to be here and grind through whatever I have to like help you out. And if I saw somebody with him that was going to be like, hey, this person has got his back, like, I'll let him go. I'll let him out and be like, all right, man, like, I'm going to bow out for a bit. Like, you're in good hands. And the second he's in, like, I want to take care of him. I want to make sure he's safe. Like, there's a couple things that happen where, you know, I could prove that I want to go to bat for him. Like, I want him to end it and be like, man, like, I don't know, just like, I love that guy. Like, he looks at me like, man, I love that guy. Like, he was there for me through thick and thin, and he would have done anything for me. Like, and that's what I want. Like, you're my friend and I want you to feel that. And like I said at the start, like, him and his sister felt that like I was there just to like, not protect, but just like if you ever needed me, I was right there and I'm going to help you. I'll give you anything you need and help you. I'll fight a bear with like, no, we're coming up with games. Like I'll fight a bear with no arms or three monkeys with no teeth. Like I will do whatever I can for you because I love you. And that kind of, I've never had that kind of connection before with anybody, let alone a whole community that was there. Like everybody was so selfless. And so, yeah, man, like that's just seeing his toughness got me through it.
It's so fascinating because you've been through so much struggle in your own life that was forced upon you for so long. And then now you're forcing struggle upon yourself and forming connections because of it. And yeah, it's a fascinating thing, man, how you've taken, I don't know if you view it this way, but if you do, it's like you've taken like such horrible, toxic situations in your formative years and transformed yourself to become the type of person who can ascend those self-imposed limits. And it's remarkable to see and so cool to see. So thank you, man. Again, thank you. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for that. Thank you for the words, man. It means a lot.
So let's take it to the triathlon now, America's longest triathlon. Yeah. What is this all about? When is this going down and how can we learn more about it?
Oh man. So basically it started out like, kind of where before the pandemic started, I think like I was just bored. I was sitting at work and 2019 was a huge year for like doing little antics or big antics and like raising funds for people and good causes. And then 2020 like started kind of cooling down. I'm like, man, like I want to do something for somebody. Like I want to help. I need to keep stimulated. Like we said, like I need to keep my mind active. I didn't have anything on my plate. And so I was sitting at work and I texted my buddy. I was like, hey man, what do you think if I biked home from Connecticut to Oregon? He's like, yeah, man, that'd be badass. I'm like, yeah, but everybody's done that. Like not everybody, but like it's a thing. People race across America. And I was like, all right, what if I ran too? And then I was like, oh, it's getting cooler. And then I was like, well, what if I swim? Like I'm already there till I'm 2/3 of a triathlon. I'm like, let's just swim. And I've always had this fascination of like, for some reason, swimming from one body of land to another like body of land. And so that's where like the closest points I could think of were Bahamas or Cuba and just kind of go from there. And, you know, it's just kind of it's a brainchild of like my own mental health issues. I've always done things for everybody else. I never thought that I had mental health issues. I knew I was depressed and like, I knew I was suicidal at times, but like, or at all times, really can't say at times, like every day, they're always in my head. But like, it was something that, I don't know, I needed to do. I'm trying to think of where I was at there. But yeah, man, I wanted to do something big and I wanted to do something for a good cause. I'm like, well, what do I have that's like close to me? And I'm like, I've done things for everybody else, done things for like leukemia and lymphoma, but nothing ever like resonates with me, like towards my family. Like I've been pretty blessed that like nobody's got cancer. Nobody's got any like, you know, disease or anything that I can support. So I support other people. And, you know, there's domestic violence, I guess you could go with, but nothing that like, I guess it does affect me, but it was like mental health. All of a sudden it clicked to me. Like I've shut that off in my life so much and so hard that I've just like put a steel wall up. Like, no, I'm fine. Like there's nothing wrong with me. I'm happy. I've been traveling. I'm living life. Like I'm doing all these cool things. Like I'm helping everybody else. I'm like, shoot, man. Like there is that mental health side of me that I need to open up about. I still haven't opened up about it through all my travels. Like I need to do that. And so that's where this kind of came into play of doing this for mental health awareness in May. And yeah, so it'll be May 2022, hopefully diving in the water right at midnight. Probably won't, because they'll probably be like, that's unsafe right at night. Probably, and for camera purposes, filming it during the day, the kickoff at least. But I definitely want to get in the water at night and like test myself because it's terrifying. But it started out as me, man. I was going to get two buddies to drive a car across the country and follow me. And I was doing all the logistics for it, trying to get it planned out, like a boat, everything else, the RVs, the cars, where to stay, if I'm going to stay anywhere. And eventually I did an interview on the news in Oregon, in Bend, and somebody reached out and they're like, hey man, like, I want to know your story. And we just wrapped for about 3 hours. I told him pretty much everything I've told you. And he's like, I love it. Like, I want to make a documentary out of this. And first it started out as like a 90 minute, like most, like 60 to 90 or 45 to like 75 minute or 60 or whatever documentary, like a short length documentary. And then as the ball got rolling, we're like, dude, this is a full feature length. Like we're shooting for 2 hours now. And it's got just out of hand. Like, this was all out of my pocket at first. Like, I was like breaking the bank trying to make this happen. And then now there's like this documentary crew that they're bringing in funds from sponsors and other companies and people donating. So it's got out of hand and it is so incredibly stressful, but I love it. People always ask me like, turn off your phone for a day. I'm like, I can't, man. Like, I don't want to. I asked for this. And like, I know that I need to keep chipping away at it, man. I can't turn this away. I can't turn away this blessing that somebody wants to film this. And like, I don't know, man, it's heartwarming that somebody wants to make a documentary out of my story and kind of help people. So it's just, I would never believe that in a million years. So, and I think most importantly, man, like, I get to make my mom proud. Like, I think about, like, damn it, I feel so like stupid. Every time I say my mom, I just like get watery. But like, I think about when I'm on the news, somebody will come into the store in Safeway and be like, hey, is Justin your son? Cause same last name or not. And we kind of look the same hair and everything. And so she's like, oh yeah. She's like, oh, I saw him on the news. And she has no idea. She's just like, wait, what? Like, he's on the news? And like, she gets all these people. And I think like the sense of like pride she gets, like, yeah, I raised that kid, you know, like that's my son. And I think of how proud she is when she hears that kind of stuff. People come up and say like, he's doing amazing things. And that's all I want to keep doing for her is make her feel proud. And I want my kids to be able to see me and see what I've gone through and see how I've like done these crazy things, and I want them to inspire off of it and reach higher ceilings than I've ever reached, you know, higher stars than I've ever reached. So when I'm sitting there, people come up to me and be like, hey, is that your kid? And be like, yeah, I guess. Like, that's crazy. Like, I want to just keep inspiring the next generation to do things, you know? And yeah, the triathlon is kind of just a big thing for me now that it's connected to me. It's connected to my heart, my soul. It's a dream.
How long's the run? How long's the bike? How long's the swim?
So the swim will be 86 miles across the Bermuda Triangle. I didn't know that at first. Like, somebody told me and I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Like, that makes it even better. So I've never been there. So there's that. And then I'll swim from Bimini, Bahamas to Miami. And then I'll cycle from Miami to San Diego, which is about 3,000 miles. And then give or take, you know, as we try to divert, we'll try to divert and pick up like big cities so we can get like a Forrest Gump type community. People just join in. And then San Diego is going to be a party, man. Like, after meeting everybody there and the community they have, the strength of the community and the ultra runners and the tri, like, it's going to be so sick getting to San Diego. I'm looking forward to that already. And then we'll start a 600 mile run from San Diego to the Golden Gate Bridge. So I'm hoping for a month.
Oh my God. Well, I am so looking forward to following you on that journey, and you'll have to come back when you complete that. And when we get ready to promote the movie or whatever, I'd love to hear the recap and have a second part to this. Yes, I'm excited. I'm excited for you. Yeah. I'm scared for you, but excited. So,
hey man, I'm scared too.
What advice, before we go to a close, what advice do you have for someone pursuing the highest version of themselves, whether that's physically, mentally, spiritually? You are clearly living your highest version. And so I'd love for you to drop that advice here.
Just don't be afraid to fail. You know, don't be scared of anything, you know, life, or you can be scared. Sorry, because I'm scared of the swim, but like, don't be afraid to fail. Like, it's okay to be scared. Make yourself feel uncomfortable, you know, like, figure out a comfortable situation. Or if you're in a comfortable situation, tear yourself down. And I don't mean like physically or emotionally or mentally. Like, I mean, like, put yourself in now an uncomfortable situation and figure out how to rise up. And eventually you're just going to become bulletproof. You know, if you find that comfort zone, and comfort is, you know, whatever that saying is, where you just become stagnant in life. Like, stagnant is, you know, a disease. Like, it's just terrible. So don't become stagnant. Once you feel yourself become stagnant, you feel comfortable and you're like, man, life is good. Get uncomfortable, man. Find something that makes you uncomfortable and don't be afraid to fail at it. Like, you will fail. Like, we all fail. It's life, you know, and the greatest stories come from people rising up over something. I say all the time, I'm more impressed by somebody who overcomes something drastic than somebody who's just physically gifted. Like, you could run the fastest 40-yard dash, or you could be the greatest football player in the world, but if you don't have a story behind you that you overcame, like, kudos, like, congrats. But like, I'm inspired by those people that, you know, a lady messaged me that she did an Ironman. She's like, yeah, it's nothing like you're doing though. And I'm like, you just recovered from cancer. Like, you are so sick. Like you know, well, that sounds a bad word, but like, you know, it's like, I was like, you are so cool. Like, you don't realize how badass you are. You know, like to me, women, especially like single mothers, are the most badass of like all. Like they are the strongest people in the world. And yeah, man, they just never give up. And people who have a cool story, man, people who never stop. So that's the only way to overcome it and to be your highest self is don't stop and just, yeah, don't quit. Don't be afraid to fail.
It seems like you are living out that truth every day. Thank you, Justin, for taking the time. Where can people connect with you further?
Yeah, my IG, so The Real Justin True, or my website is whoisjtrue.com. And that's got a really cool trailer, like a sizzle reel that we just put up of the triathlon. So if people want to go check that out, get hyped on that, like, or don't, like, it's yeah, man, it's going to be sweet. I'm just insanely excited about this. And the next 31 weeks is going to be mental. So yeah, man, those are two places to find me.
Awesome. And, well,
and like people want to hit me up, I'm there.
We'll put your links below. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, dude.
Thank you as always for listening until this point in the episode. It means the world to me. And I'm extremely, extremely grateful for your time and attention. If you enjoyed this episode or you didn't, just let me know your thoughts on Twitter at @HeyDannyMiranda. Takes 3 seconds, drop a message, or share it with someone you think would enjoy it as well. This episode meant so much to me because I was so appreciative of how vulnerable Justin was and how much he was willing to share of himself. So please do me and maybe him a favor as well to get this out to more people. Thank you as always for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Peace.